Good evening, guys. How is everybody? Hey, Lewis, how are you feeling, my friend, after the weekend? I can't believe Greg made you train on Monday after the weekend's activities. How are you feeling today?
Doing okay, but I had like a couple of nights of some very severe leg cramps. But that's
Yeah.
thank you to Ben for all of those single leg lifts that I had to do.
And how is your wife, mate? Is she okay?
She's doing much better. Thank you for asking. Appreciate
Yeah,
it.
no worries, no worries. We at least we sent you back to her in one piece anyway. That's the most
Well,
important.
she's I'm down in Florida. She's up in Connecticut, but
Okay.
she's doing
Yeah.
well.
Yeah,
My son
good.
is taking care of her.
Oh, good, good, good. How
So
are you, Marty? How nice to see you, mate. How are things?
nice to see you too. You're looking a lot fresher than I'd expect after the journey you just had.
Oh, I don't feel fresh, mate. Don't be fooled by what I look like. I'm pretty much, I think I'm near, I must be close to 40 hours deep on about 3 hours at the moment. So if for all you guys listening, if I do just fall asleep on the call, just shout really loudly and it'll wake me back up again. I brought the dog in here with me just to make sure that she keeps me awake if I do fall asleep anyway. But yeah, long trip, but as Lewis will tell you, was absolutely worth it. It's a great weekend. Always good to catch up with everybody and put them through the paces. And as I think I said to you on voice note, it's just great to kind of be able to get hands on and just be able. A lot of what I'm going to talk about today in regards to biomechanics is going to be based around the stuff that we've looked through at the weekend and kind of, as you know, working with me, what I look for in regards to any sort of kind of imbalance and how we can just kind of heal any ailments, if that makes sense. It's great to see Matt's on the call as well because we can use Matt as an example in regards to the things that he came in with and kind of how we'd remedy those. So, hey, Paul, how are you, brother?
Perfectly fine.
Yeah, you well?
Yeah.
Yeah, good, good. Just letting everybody in. So, what we're going to start with today, guys, is as I do with most of my calls, is I just want to start off. Obviously, I've had a lot of wins this weekend. Just want each of you to kind of just unmute yourself one by one. I'll go in order and I'll let you know just to let me know any wins you've had this week. So, the wins can be inclusive of personal, professional, physical. So, kind of just share because we've had such a good weekend. I want to start these calls at I take just with a little bit of positive reinforcement for yourselves, more so kind of around the wins you've had so far this week. So if we start, I'll go from left to right what I can see on my screen. So Matt, you can go first. Give me a win, mate, personally or professionally this week. How's things been?
Oh, pretty good week in a lot of ways. I would say the win is, I think I found that during my lunchtime is a better spot for me to work out. So that's that. It doesn't sound like much, but I get to come home on time to see my wife. I don't really have anything to do during lunch. I'm no longer going out to eat stupid places for food because I'm eating what Dan tells me to eat. And so I'm really locked in. I have to rush through it a little bit. Sorry, Dan.
That's okay.
It's really working for me. It feels a lot better.
Good. And how is obviously, and I'm sure you won't mind me mentioning on the call, how with us creating the structures around scheduling and stuff, is that helping kind of declutter the brain that we spoke about? To give you guys context, me and Matt spoke about the last couple of calls around kind of just systemize, because he's got so much going on, just systemizing his day and using the 16-hour audit that you've all got access to just stipulate things that he should be doing and avoid kind of doing the stuff that he shouldn't be doing. So is that helping with you to be able to strategize as well?
Well, I have some more work to do around that. Typically, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday are pretty structured with my work schedule, 8 to 5. And so I think to answer that, I'd say I got a lot more work to do. Really, the free days, the non-work days, are more scattered. So where I'm landed after our talk was, I'm getting up pretty early, but I'm not trying to cram 10 things into to before work. I just eat a good breakfast and get us some warm up. I'm locked into 8 to 5. I got a really good structure of having my food and hitting the gym. somewhat quickly, but it works for me. And then I have more work to do on those 3 days. It sounds crazy, but they're more chaotic and more full, and less structured is not good for me.
And I always say on your rest days, so I always use the analogy weekday and weekends. Kind of people typically have got a good routine Monday to Friday because they've got a job that they do, which is specified hours, and then they have a few hours either side of that. So in regards to scheduling, I think kind of scheduling on the non-working days are super important because there needs to be a little bit of freedom in there and a flexibility for family time. Sort of things, and that's important. And I think me and Marty have spoke about this, but the most important thing is from a schedule and structure standpoint, the times where there is the opportunity where things, I don't want to use the description of going wrong, but where there is more things involved, that's where if we set a skeleton up, essentially we'll be able to, again, it's not always going to be perfect, but we have got structure, which then gives you that little bit of clarity of mind to not worry yourself into procrastination, overwhelm, and all those feelings that are associated with having the best of intentions to get something done and ending up getting nothing done, essentially.
Yeah, exactly.
And how about you, Marty? Give me a win for this week so far, or the last week or so.
I think I just mentioned this to you as well. I'll share it with everyone. So, I'm 9 weeks in with Coach Dan and Greg, and it's been really transformative for me in a lot of ways. And it's really starting to show. And my wife is like, "Well, I want some of that. Like, what are you doing? Like, what's going on?" And so so we had a call with Mattia this week to talk about, some onboarding to potentially work with the crew here. So I guess leading by example is helping my wife, feel more encouraged to take more control of her health too. So that's been a big one this week.
Yeah, that's amazing. Just and like we always say, kind of getting your family and you guys all on this call will know that the biggest thing we can have from an emotional standpoint is have a buy-in from those nearest and dearest to us. And I always say with these type of journeys, quite often we go on these journeys on a solo mission, and it can be quite selfish at times, but that incorporation of kind of loved ones and families is super important because I was talking to Ben over the weekend about kind of how as fathers, typically we should show and not tell to our kind of youngsters. And I think just by kind of involving the nearest and dearest in the process, it just helps massively to kind of stimulate the sometimes big changes that we have to go through because yes, you will have trained, but to this extent to get the and what I describe as changing an old normal to a new normal can be quite a significant change for not just yourself but everybody. So bringing everybody along for the ride is super important as well. So Lewis, you're next up. I'm sure you've got some good wins for me from the weekend, so let's hear them.
Well, I mean, I guess it was Marty just was saying that his wife basically got a buy-in. My son, who I've been fighting with for, like years to try and get him to start training and stuff, and just the very fact that I went on that weekend, he was like, "I want to talk to you about what happened because, like, I've had some things going on," and it's just like. Suddenly, there's like a connection that wasn't there before. And that's
Nice.
super important to me because, like that's, I mean, I've been working out for so many years that it's sort of like there's nothing there. You know what I mean? It's like you improve everything that I do. Don't get me wrong, but it's not like I end up like sitting there going, "Oh God, I'm so much better now," but that relationship. It improved my whole, like perspective on what I'm doing and gave me a little bit of fuel, if nothing else, to end up like doing more because just, it's so much
Love
better.
that, mate. Yeah,
Thank
love
you.
that for you, mate. No, I love that. Paul, what have you got for me, buddy? How's your week been? Kind of give me a personal. For those of you guys that are joined, we're just going through personal and professional wins for the week. So, Paul, you're up, buddy.
Training for me is going towards a conditioning phase from a bulk to a cut, and I'm hitting the chain. It's like the first weekend I'm handling changes pretty well.
Yeah, good. Making good progress. And how's the transition from obviously eating probably a significant amount of food to kind of lowering it. Have you noticed a difference yet in regards to hunger or anything, or is it just kind of you're just kind of getting into the throes of it at the moment?
Still kind of getting into the throes of it. Only thing that's been cut out at this point is carb powder, but I think it's like a slight uptake, but not much.
That's pretty much good. Good. Well, we're looking for, well, next time I do a call beginning of November, I'll be coming back to this as well, buddy, and see where you're at kind of 6 weeks down the line. I'm sure you'll be in a totally different position, mate, and you'll be moaning at me that you need more food by then. So, John, you're next up, buddy. How are you? Hope you're well, my friend. Kind of give me a win for the week, bud.
I really like using my daily walks to catch up on Ben's podcast, and I re-listened to last week's coaching call. It's going well, but I like using those walks as to get some of the stuff I need to get done for the course, just get my mind saturated.
And how have you listened to, well, it ties nicely into today, but have you listened to Ben's podcast that he released on Monday with Stu McGill?
Yes, I have.
Yeah. And what did you think?
I thought it was interesting. I've read some stuff of Stu over the years, and I'll listen to it again. But it was informative.
Yeah, good. We'll go into bits of that later on the call, because obviously with today we're going to go for a little bit of biomechanics and how I see it essentially and how I assess clients and we use it to our advantage. But yeah, I followed Stu, been lucky enough to study under him well over 10 years ago now. So yeah, we'll go through some of that in a bit. Next up, Eric. I haven't seen you on a call before, mate. Hope you're well. Great to meet you, buddy. Give me a win if you can.
Good to see you too. So it's been kind of an interesting year for me, injury-wise. Kind of recovering from a couple injuries, and then just found out a couple weeks ago that I have a hernia on the right side. So I'm kind of navigating that process. But overall, I'm feeling better, and now that I know where the pain's coming from, able to manage it a little bit, and probably after the first of the year, going to get surgery to take care of it. But just it's nice to have answers and know where the mystery pain's coming from.
And has there been any other injuries that have kind of been troubling this year, or is it mainly the hernia that's causing the most discomfort?
The hernia, and then I have I'm kind of on and off tennis elbow, or whatever the heck it is, something in my elbow into my like the bottom of my bicep. And I've actually done, gosh, probably like six rounds of PRP now. It's finally starting to take hold and do something. So in the past I've kind of done some PT and it's helped. But I this last go around, man, it was so bad. I barely had any grip strength in my right arm, and it was pretty brutal. And it took a couple months to really start to heal, but it feels like there's some momentum now, and I'm feeling pretty good.
Good. Well, I think you'll find some value in today just in regards to a few things from a training methodology standpoint, but also how I choose to assess the body from a biomechanics structure. And that I'm hoping that, and again, it'll be great to hear your feedback at the end, see if you find value in kind of how I look at the body in regards to training. And especially, I've dealt with a lot of people with, and Matt's had a bit of tennis golfer's elbow as well in his time, and what we've gone through just being able to manipulate the variables of execution to give yourself a best chance of not putting too much pressure on the elbow. So hopefully you'll find some value in today. Jeff, you're next up, buddy. Kind of give me a win for the week.
So I think win for the week. Just talking about training and injuries, a little bit of over the last month of we had kind of a heavier phase going into some vacation time, and just kind of tweaked kind of lower back off to the left between the back and the hip there, so maybe SI joint, maybe kind of rotators, something like that. And so we've just kind of kept training, but then modified the training to try to not tweak that as much, and doing some rolling and some other stuff, some mobility stuff, and that seems to be helping a lot. But it's happy that it's not a full shutdown of everything. It's like work through it, keep going, and do what you can, but don't aggravate the thing. So.
And just creating awareness and manipulating the variables, right? And then last up, Austin, I know you haven't got your photo on, so I would imagine you're either at work or driving. If you can, there he is. I knew he'd be driving. Give me a win for the week, buddy.
I guess just going back to the Teddy Muscle Camp and areas of opportunity that I've learned I need to improve in, or areas I was already aware of, but really reiterated it. It's just identifying, things that I need to do better to improve. I would take that as a win. It's good to have some actions.
Yeah, it's great to hear. And obviously, we know we've getting to have a look at you on Monday as well, just kind of the limitations that you have, which, again, we will explain a little bit more in depth in here in regards to kind of how I look at things, which brings us nicely into today's topic, which is primarily biomechanics. Okay, so for me, kind of, if I wanted to give an overview of what biomechanics means to me, there's a whole host of different things, but we're going to focus a little bit more on kind of the body itself. So it's a set of mechanical principles that essentially for us as humans is going to govern motion, things like structure, function, and also biological systems. So it can happen within the whole body, but also down to the cellular level. But what we're going to probably look at more so today is essentially the aspect of biomechanics of force. So within the biological systems, such as push and pull movements, just let someone in, muscle and bones, and the external forces that we're going to apply from a training perspective, but also we can be aware of in the kind of whole continuum. So for me, kind of mechanics is something that we need to be uber aware of. And there's so many different facets to mechanics that there's not one singly thing that I don't assess when I'm either starting to work with a client or kind of going through a process with a client. So if we start at the beginning and then move through. So the biggest key considerations from a lifting perspective for us as individuals is our own specific mechanics. So we've got Marty that's similar height to me at 6'4". Then we've got Austin that I'm going to spitball here. Austin's 5'8", 5'9", maybe even 5'10". So if I've got that wrong, I apologize. So one of the biggest biomechanics that we need to be aware of is limb length and kind of how tall we are. That's going to play a massive factor in regards to how we perform exercises. So for me, having a awareness of what our body is capable of from a biomechanical standpoint is going to be super important as a get-go. So how many of you guys, and just put a show of hands, have had a bit like Jeff's just mentioned, kind of any sort of injuries or aches and pains primarily from training? So elbows, knees, lower back, shoulders. So pretty much all of us, right? So again, for me, biomechanics are going to play a massive part in that. And anybody that lifts, and most people that lift, will have had some sort of niggles at some point in their training career. That doesn't happen just out of the blue. It happens because of a culmination of factors, right? So the first thing is, and the first thing I choose to look at will be posture. So I've got an infographic up here and I'm going to share it that I use, and the guys that were on the camp at the weekend will have seen this before. And this is basically just kind of a posture assessment. So this is my posture assessment that I got Gav to take a photo at the weekend. So this is just my standing posture. So you'll see the front shot, where if we have a look at these scores at the bottom of the screen, my head tilts to the left. I'm typically kind of I'm high shoulder right. And then lower body, kind of I've got a slightly hitched left hip. That, and if we go a little bit deeper to my history, kind of I know that from my old football injuries, torn ligaments in my left ankle, torn hamstring in my left hamstring, Achilles rupture in my left leg, and quite a bad hip injury from my younger days. So the importance of understanding what injuries and previous injuries could have done to posture, and when you was on your onboarding call with your coach, kind of they will have asked, right, what are your injuries? What are your limitations? And having a broad knowledge of any breaks, sprains, twists, or pulls throughout your life could play a role in what your body's expressing at the moment. So I know with me, what I need to be aware of when I'm training is very much kind of I get right shoulder dominant if I'm not careful from a execution and intention standpoint, because that all stems from my hips. So kind of lower limb, I've now developed one leg a little bit longer than the other. So the key considerations for me from a frontal plane movement is disparity between left and right. And there's not one of us that are sat on this call that doesn't have a left to right or a front to back imbalance. And that's always important to note when setting out on a journey, whether it be foundational or you've been training for years. A spatial awareness of what your natural posture like is super important. So we move to the side photo. So you'll see kind of, I'm a little bit kyphotic with being 6'4" and spending most of my adult life ducking down to talk to people. That's created a little bit of structural kyphosis in my spine where this is rolled forward. The rest of my hips, knee and head is relatively balanced, but I have to do a lot of work through my thoracic to kind of mobilize that and be just create that spatial awareness of that when I'm about to train. So gaining a great insight into your own static posture is super important. And I said to the guys at the weekend, not just for how you train, but that spatial and environmental awareness of all the time, how we sit, how we stand, how we move. So a lot of us here are sitting down on this call. And I would imagine that a lot of us guys kind of for work or professionally or when they're at home with the family sit down a lot, which we know that puts us into structural dysfunction. So if we remember the thesis that when a muscle is either shortened or lengthened, it's in a compromised position. So let's take sitting for an example. Most of us sit slightly kyphotic, which means that from a muscular standpoint, everything on the front is going to be shortened. So your pec, anterior delt, serratus, kind of all going to be shortened. So it's in essentially a shortened isometric contraction. Everything in the back, so rear delts, rhomboids, lats, traps, are all kind of lengthened. So instantly, if we're not aware of our sitting position, I'm not asking you to kind of sit like this all day at work, but create that environmental awareness of kind of how you carry yourself kind of on a day-to-day basis, because having 3 to 5 hours in the gym where you may do 10 minutes of mobility and 45 to 60 minutes of strength is not going to correct you being essentially 168 hours a week, 16 hours of those of your day is going to be sitting or standing. Not having a spatial awareness of that is, again, over time, can lead to things shortening, things lengthening, and ultimately creating a bit of disparity between left to right, front to back. So how I want to start the biomechanics is just create, be aware of how you sit, be aware of how you stand. And again, we know optimal posture is stood up nice and tall, glutes contracted, intra-abdominal pressure, again, retracted and depressed scapula and chest nice and tall. And I'm not foolish enough to think that you're going to walk around like that all day, but most importantly, create that awareness. And if you are spending long periods in this position, then we may need to mobilize and do a little bit more mobility throughout the day to readdress the balance or the dysfunction that's been caused over the day. And I always say pain, tightness, it's a reaction, a chemical reaction from your body to tell you that it doesn't like something. So starting off with something like simple posture from a biomechanics standpoint is super important. So for me, actually being aware of where you spend most of your time and how you're sitting. I joked with the guys at the camp at the weekend, I drive an automatic, and obviously with my left hip being tight, I know that I drive very funny. So my back will tend to kick on. And any of you guys that listen to the Ben's podcast with Stuart McGill, he talks about these certain positions of back pain that he will assess for, and more often than not will show off the same results. And for you, what I want you to create an awareness of, if you have got shoulder impingement, you do have a little bit of tennis elbow, if you can identify where and when that's happening and break it down from a joint by joint perspective, well, what's going on with anything like tennis elbow? My personal view is it stems from internal rotation, because if we get internal rotation of the shoulders, which we can't get without elevation through the trap, what it naturally does is it internally rotates that humerus. So if the shoulder's internally rotated, the humerus is internally rotated, what it will start to do is shut off the bicep, which then what's happened is a lot more torque is applied to the elbow when we're doing day-to-day tasks or lifting, which essentially will show a pain reaction. How I assess the body to break down kind of pain is I look at the body from bottom to top. So if we go, let's look at seven joints, or let's go eight joints. So we've got ankles, knees, hips, lower spine, thoracic spine, cervical. Then we'll add on elbows and wrists. Each one of those joints require either mobility or stability. So if we go from a bottom up, ankles, mobility, knees, stability, hips, mobility, lumbar spine stability, thoracic mobility, cervical stability, elbow, because it comes in from the thoracic, stability, and then wrist mobility, right? So if we use that principle, which ones of those joints are often the joints that we feel pain? Lower back, knees, elbows, neck, and what's required at those joints? Stability. Okay, so I often say the site, unless there's been some sort of trauma in there, the site of pain is quite often not the source. So if a site of pain, if we're talking about Jeff is his elbow, and we've just identified that if he's chronically internally rotated, when he's lifting, potentially these, again, the awareness around lifting or kind of that short head of the bicep shuts up, there's going to be more torque applied there. So I always say a key way to get out of pain for people is identify the joints that are above and below the pain that require mobility. And quite often you'll find your kind of linchpin to changing that pain expression. So if we move it down the chain to the lower back, unless there's been kind of any sort of trauma to the lower back and the lower back has actually given way and essentially you've had to have surgery to fuse discs, most of us sat on this call are walking around with some form of bulging disc. More often than not, it doesn't express pain. But what a bulging disc is an essential compression. And where does that compression come from? It comes from a lack of hip mobility. So where we might be sat in anterior pelvic tilt or posterior pelvic tilt, there may be tightness in those hip flexors from an internal and external rotation standpoint. It may be weakness in the glutes, the hamstrings, or the abs from a muscular perspective. So it's never your lower back that's the problem. And a lot of people would look back and go, oh, my lower back's weak because it hurts. It isn't. Your lower back quite often does a lot of the donkey work because either something's tight or something's weak. So for me, going back to what I said a second ago, the site of pain is often not the source unless there has been some trauma, any breaks, sprains, or we've had any kind of surgery from there. So for me, looking at exercise mechanics is super important, because if we go back to the first part of the talk, I said to you that kind of limb length is going to play a massive part. So understanding whether you've got long limbs, short limbs, and where you're going to be biased is going to be super important. We'll go into the exercise bit shortly, but from a biomechanics standpoint, being able to assess your own individual structure and understand where there's potentially potholes or limitations or blind spots, and just making sure you do them. So how can we do this from an exercise standpoint? So my guys that know me, Matt knows and Marty knows, I love videos, okay? Because as a coach, I can see what's moving. And quite often, our bodies are always going to want to go into our strongest structural position, no matter whether it creates an extra bit of torque in the joints that we don't want to. So as an example, I've got a couple of photos here that I took of Gab when we was in Toronto a while ago, just to exemplify kind of force. So if we move to, let's start with a seated row, just for the benefit of Jeff, and I know Eric mentioned a few bits about kind of elbows as well. But what we're looking at here is we're now looking at resistance in regards to biomechanics. So we've got the structure of what's being used. So if we take this row, for instance, we've got two parts to this. We've got Gav on the row, and we've got the exercise itself. When we look at biomechanics, and I'm only going to go in shallow here, and in future talks, I'm going to go a little bit deeper into the stuff that I speak about, because again, it takes a whole hour, and I don't want to just bombard you with loads of posh words tonight, because ultimately, if I don't give you the in-depth and the understanding, you can't go away and apply it tomorrow. So for me, this is today, from a biomechanics standpoint, is all about you creating an awareness of positions and how can we make exercise more difficult. Obviously, send videos to your coach, etc., so they can have a look at this and tell your positions. But for me, it's looking at this two prongs. So we've got Gav. So he's doing a seated row. So the primary role of a seated row is to work your lats, correct? So it's a narrow elbow, elbows kind of by a side. So it will be a lat exercise. We have not got the elbow at 45 to 75 degrees elbow abduction where we're hitting the rear delts and the mid traps and the mid back. It's going to be predominantly a lat exercise because of the position of the elbow. So looking at Gav on his own, from a performance and execution standpoint, what I've drawn on here for the benefit of this is two yellow circles. Those two yellow circles for the benefit of today are our axes of rotation. So they're the axes of the body or the joints in the body that are moving when we perform this exercise. Okay. Then I've drawn on the green line. So the green line is the line of pull. And that's a direction in which the weight that we're using is going to be pulling. Okay. So you see the yellow dots in this photo on the left and the line of pull. What we've then got from there is we can create almost a, well, we can call it a moment arm or a line of effort or torque. We can call it any of those derivatives here. But for the benefit of this demonstration, we'll call it a moment arm because that's the technical term, again, popularized by a chap called Tom Purvis, who runs a company called RTS that does a lot of biomechanics stuff. So you'll see in this end position, when the cable is furthest away from the body, a moment arm is derived from being a perpendicular angle from a line of force to the axis of rotation. So here we have Gavin in his lengthened, a relatively lengthened position of the lat. You'll see that the gap between the line of force, which stays congruent, and the axis of the shoulder is quite long, whereas there is no moment arm to the elbow. So what does this mean? This means that as Gav's got this cable here, and he's obviously got the weight, so the weight's off a stack, so it was low being pulled in a horizontal position, a lot of the work is being done by these lats because the moment arm to the lats is significantly longer than the moment arm to the elbow. Does that make sense to everybody? So the tension and where the force is being produced is going to be from Gav's lats in a relatively lengthened position. We then move into the contracted position. So kind of we've got him here. So again, the axis of rotation for the shoulder is in the same position. Now the axis of the rotation for the elbow has been moved to directly under the shoulder, which is a position that I love my guys to pull to because essentially if we drive that elbow past the shoulder, what typically happens, we get internal rotation, right? So if we get internal rotation in the shoulder, once that elbow travels past the shoulder, that's going to take the emphasis off the lats and put it more into the anterior deltoid. So range of movement is super important, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But for the benefit of this, we can now see when Gav's in that short position, the line of force stays exactly the same, if not slightly higher, because the cable is slightly below him. So it's now moving in a slightly diagonal fashion. But we'll see we'll have two clear, distinct moment arms now. So for me, again, the moment arm to the shoulder is significantly longer than the moment arm to the elbow. So we are going to be getting a little bit of bicep work because there is a moment arm there. So there's still going to be a little bit of force being applied into the elbow. So creating a little bit of torque there, but primarily with the size of the moment arm to the shoulder, which is probably a 2-to-1, 3-to-1 size from the elbow, most of this working tension is going to be on the lats. So can everybody see that? So the reason why I wanted to show this from a biomechanics standpoint, because how often do we see people, and again, if I take this off just so you can see me a little bit more, how often do we see people row into this position where the elbow's high? Okay, so if we think about that mechanically, if my elbow's pulling up here and my elbow's still tight to the body, okay, and we drew that line of force a little bit higher, so it's now coming, the cable's running through my hand and it's going up into this part of my shoulder. If we was to draw that as a line of force and with those two axes still, the line of force to the elbow is now significantly longer than the axis of rotation to the shoulder, which from a mechanics standpoint just means that I'm going to be getting a lot of torque through my bicep because there's a greater increased degree of elbow flexion. The more elbow flexion I'm creating, the more I'm going to get bicep. And most importantly, that moment arm to the bicep, the elbow is significantly increased. So from a force perspective and torque, there's going to be so much more torque into that elbow and the tension is not going to be on my lats. We then couple that with range of movement. And as I mentioned, the minute that the elbow moves past the line of that torso into this position, this shoulder has to internally rotate. So again, remember what I said about internal rotation of the shoulder. If we internally rotate the shoulder, that tension comes off the lats and falls into the anterior delt. And remember as well, if we're internally rotated, that internally rotates the humerus, which again puts a lot of torque and tension through that elbow. So as well as the resistance profile of the machine and the apparatus we're using, we have to be very careful of our positions of pull and our positions of push, as well as active range of movement, to most importantly facilitate protection of the joints. Those of you guys that were with us at the weekend, you heard us talk about active and passive, right? So within exercise, there's two parts to range. There's an active range and there's a passive range. So the active range is essentially, if we flip it now into a chest press, it's simply the position that you can get to whilst keeping total mechanical tension on the working muscle. So I like to use the example of a chest press because the old bro science with a barbell bench press, okay, was get the bar to your chest, bro, right? So kind of that was typically seen as a great exercise to build your chest, but you've got to touch the bar with your chest. So me, as I mentioned, being 6'4", my arms are super, super long. If I was to take that bar to my chest, what happens? So this is on the chest. You can see here, massive internal rotation, kind of, again, which creates that hypertonicity through the traps. So it's actually, the tension's fallen off my pecs and it's actually gone into my shoulder. So that drive and desire to get into that bottom position has come at a cost of me being able to create mechanical tension to the pecs. It shifted it to the delts. Again, with that internal rotation, I'm probably getting a lot of torque through my elbows. So the chance of injury is significantly increased by just increasing that range of movement. So if I was to bench press, I know that my range where I can keep my elbow loaded on my under my wrist is probably here. So slightly below, but I'm still not internally rotating through this shoulder. So if I then add 220 pounds to it, I will feel like I can get the bar to the chest. But if my natural range of movement is here and I go a little bit further under load, that just means that I've been pushed into a passive range of movement. So the difference between active range and passive range is active is where you can get things to with relatively low load or no load at all. But passive is when we are under duress and we are under a lot of load. And one of the guys on the camp was talking about the other day in regards to one of his clients basically did a squat, but with a bar, but said that he could get a significantly increased range when he had a couple of plates on there. And it was on one of the courses when we was in Canada last year, I believe. But for me, that's an example that he didn't get to that range. The facilitation of having 220 pounds on his back has pushed him to that range. So he's gone through the range that essentially he's able to contract out of and been pushed into a passive range, which from a limitation standpoint, that is going to, one, massively increase the risk of injury. But if you can't get to that range naturally, one, two, or three of the muscles have got to work. So for me, understanding your own limitations, your assessments, whether there is any left to right disparity, but also your active and passive range. And as I said, how can we look at this in more depth? I can't stress it enough. If you're not sending videos to your coach, send videos to your coach. I've still got a few of Marty's to respond to, but every exercise he sends me, kind of, it's super important because exercise is not easy. And I always say to really allow us to do our thing, like it's the intricacy and detail in these exercises that is super important. And the first role of program design is injury prevention. So understanding your potential limitations from a static and a natural perspective from old injuries and limb length and all those sort of things. But then when we put it together in a program, being able to see how you move under that load is super important because, as I've said, with any sort of injuries like tennis elbows, golf elbow, lower back, as long as there's no trauma, you should be able to within 1 to 2 phases of training be pain free. It's different with a hernia and those sort of things because that now becomes a little bit different. But if is it most of the time, and I would argue a lot of people this, most injuries or pains are caused by poor understanding of posture, poor understanding of one's biomechanics, and exercise inefficiency by not moderating active range and understanding kind of potential joint limitations. So for me, looking at kind of biomechanics is super important because it can be a loophole, one, for us to build more muscle because we're going to create more mechanical tension on the working muscle, but two, and most importantly, stave off injury from a longevity perspective and just allow you to kind of be in a position of health from a training perspective for as long as you train. And again, there's the argument, and you guys have probably seen it at the moment, this is argument between bodybuilders and scientific science lifters. And we were, me, Gav, and Ben were talking about this yesterday in Tampa. But I think for us as coaches and for you as clients of us, it's blending all the different methodologies that are out there at the moment and putting them into a formula that works for you and you alone. It's not a case of kind of, oh, this methodology works, let's try it. It's being able to use a blend of the methodologies with everything that you provide us with, from a video, active range, postural assessment, photo perspective, to really understand kind of how and what you've got going on. So those of you guys that have heard me speak before, I'm a big fan of unilateral exercise compared to bilateral exercise, simply because I know assessing people for 20 years, I've not really met anybody from professional sportsmen and women all the way down the chain to just normal general population people. I've never met anybody that's kind of balanced or kind of from a postural perspective, kind of hasn't got some sort of dysfunction that's been caused by life, sport, or anything else going on. So creating an awareness of each joint, and if you do have pain, kind of deciphering, right, where do I feel pain? Oh, it's my lower back. Okay, so what's above and below my lower back? Does my thoracic move? Do my hips move in internal, external rotation? Is there a disparity in weakness from posterior to anterior? And just that's why the foundational phases of these programs are super important, because, and we'll talk about Matt in a second, in regards to kind of just understanding how you can gain fluidity, but most importantly, bringing you out of pain is going to be the most important thing, and understanding from a mechanics perspective what's going on. So we've done upper body. So let me just show you this photo. I'll just click on to Gav when we're talking about lower body as well. So again, same principles requiring. I've got this pendulum squat photo, but obviously this can be applied to kind of any squat pattern, a lunge pattern, as long as we know what we're looking for. So in regards to looking at bias, biomechanically from a resistance profile of, or a strength profile of a muscle, we can look at this pendulum squat. So now the line of force, obviously with the pendulum that you can see with Gav here, is going diagonally up because that's the position in which Gav's trying to push, is in a relatively 45 degree angle. The photo on the left, if we draw the line of force directly through his foot right up to the ceiling, we now have two axes again that are working throughout the squat pattern, the knee and the hip. You'll see with this first iteration here that it's relatively equal in regards to the length of that moment arm. Remember, the moment arm is just a perpendicular angle from a line of force to the axis of rotation, so it's always straight. So you'll see that this, with for Gav, is quite a balanced pendulum squat. So he's going to recruit, as long as his pelvis is stable, hamstrings, glutes, and a little bit of quads there. And then we've changed his foot position on the second picture. So the actual line of force stays relatively the same, but the axis of rotation, again, have stayed the same. But because kind of his feet are higher on the plate this time, although the line of force still moves at a 45 degree angle, it's now closer to the knee because he's moved his feet up a little bit. So you'll see now the moment arm to the knee itself is relatively small, whereas the moment arm to the hip is a lot longer, and again, three times as long, like we've on the seated row. So he's going to be getting a lot more hamstrings and glutes out of this movement just because of the foot position and where we've positioned it. So again, being able to under those of you guys that are squatting, most of us that squat with a free bar have at some point in their life suffered from some sort of back pain irritation. So using initially your postural assessment, so your left and right discrepancy, do we have a hitch hip left or right, longer legs, do we sit in anterior pelvic tilt and those sort of things as a primary, but also when we're assessing your squat, where are we forcing most load? Because I can be damn sure that any of you guys that are tall like myself, I've got very long legs. So because my femurs are slightly longer than my tibia and fibia, kind of my femurs are a lot longer. So kind of a length compared to tibia and fibia, I have to almost sit back in the squat unless I've got my heels raised because my femurs are just a little bit longer. So just naturally feet flat on the floor, I've got quite a hip dominant squat. If your hamstrings and your glutes aren't strong enough to facilitate that squat to the top, then what's going to happen? If you've got 220 pounds on your back, what's the next muscle that's going to work if your hamstrings and glutes aren't strong enough to facilitate that movement to the top? It's going to be your lower back. So we go into, well, I call it slut drop or butt wink, kind of whatever it is. You feel your hips kick back and you almost have to drive up and drag up, which just puts an exponential amount of pressure on that lumbar spine. So any pains that people have, we can pretty much have a look at posture, have a look at kind of a biomechanical assessment in regards to how you move and be able to decipher kind of what's not moving, what joint positions aren't adequate for the exercise we're using and where is all that tension being put. So going back to what Jeff says with golfer and tennis elbow, training around it, but training smarter. Obviously, it's going to be slightly different with a hernia, but ultimately using postural assessments and also exercise execution and understanding kind of where our loopholes and our limitations are. I've said to Marty before, bodybuilding isn't made for guys that are as tall as us. I'm 6'4", and our lever length and how far bars and stuff have to travel is crazy. And just on a bench press, I have to, compared to Gav, I have to push the bar at least 3 or 4 inches to get to the top of the movement, which the further any sort of load moves away from a joint, when we're looking at torque and tension, there's a lot more weight on the bar. So it might only move by small bits, but if there is any breakdown in regards to posture and those sort of things, that added 5-10 pounds that has been created by an extra 1 or 2 inches of movement can have a significant impact on things breaking down. So for me, as I've said to you guys so far, like just making sure that you're aware of your limitations, you know what's going on, and then working with your coach from a video perspective and looking at your own specific biomechanics to not allow it to become a limiting factor. And that's the biggest thing from today. And as I move through the calls in future weeks, I will go deeper into the science of biomechanics. But from that as a whole up to this point, has anybody got any questions? And most importantly, for those of you guys that are attending the call, does that make sense? Has anybody got any questions? Because I know I talk very fast. I apologize for being British. But has anybody got any questions off the back of those in regards to the role of biomechanics that are specific, or any questions around yourselves that from a specificity of biomechanics that I can answer while I'm here?
So I have a question about the pendulum squat.
Yeah.
So are you saying that it's better if the feet are further up on the platform so that the force is straight up so it's more...
Yeah, great question, John. And this applies to every exercise, not just a pendulum. The answer to that is it depends on the goal of the exercise. So again, if I'm putting the pendulum in as a quad exercise, I'd probably want it my feet a little bit lower on the plate, a la the first, the image on the left that we saw of Gav. Whereas if I, again, do suffer from sore knees or I lack the dorsiflexion to drive my knees over toe from an assessment, I'd probably want my feet a little bit higher to protect the knee because I lack a little bit of dorsiflexion to reduce the torque in my knee. So the answer to that, John, and again, this applies to all exercises, so great question, is it depends on the goal and the outcome of the exercise. I prefer with a lot of clients, because the main limitation I see with guys that have played sport and general population guys is their restriction is going to be hip flexion and lack of ankle dorsiflexion a lot of the time. So to make sure that we apply force equally, shall we say, I like a relatively central foot on the pendulum, because if we're using the pendulum as a single exercise, keeping it balanced is what I'd look for in regards to getting the quad maximally short or relatively long. We can use a breadth of exercises. So to go a little bit deeper on that, if I was to put an optimal quad workout together for someone and add three exercises, what I'd be trying to do is get each range equally. So we want the short position of the quad, a relatively mid-range exercise, and then something that's going to lengthen the quad out. So for me, I'd go from shortest position, which is typically the weakest position, something like a leg extension or a knee extension where we can get that quad maximally short. Then I'd move into a strength exercise. Again, we've got the pendulum there, but I'm a big fan, like Ben, of a hack squat where it's going to train us for a relatively full range, but we're trying to get below 90 degrees knee flexion, which is going to train, well, it's going to take the quad to a relative length and range. And then I'd probably put as a C exercise, something like a Bulgarian split squat or a front foot elevated split squat, where I'm looking to drive that knee maximally over toe and get as much knee flexion to get as much length in the quad as possible. So I was talking about this at the weekend. I don't like the superlative of best exercise or preferred. Everything's dependent on you guys as an individual and what the goal and the outcome is. So there is no best at building hypertrophy, building your quads, your chest, etc. Again, with your own specific biomechanics, there'll be the best exercises at a certain period that fit you guys as an individual, if that makes sense.
Thank you.
Yeah, no worries, buddy. Any other questions, guys?
I guess this kind of piggybacks on what we were just talking about, but as a generic question, then we can use maybe the squat as the example, right? So how do you distinguish when you're looking at the biomechanics of a given motion?
Yeah.
Where the motion should ideally come from and where it's not safe for that motion to come from. So for example, on the squat, yeah, you're going to have motion at your knees, at your ankles, at your hips.
Yeah.
Right. And then some people will make the argument, well, you should also have a little bit of that kind of pelvic tilt, like tucking underneath at the bottom of the squat. But if you're loading, lots of people say, please don't do that. Keep your back flat. Keep the pelvis stable. And as soon as that feels like it starts to turn, you're done. Like that's the bottom. Don't keep pushing through that. So how do you distinguish those kind of two extremes? Yeah.
Great question, Jeff. So for me, it's seeing how somebody squats naturally. So again, getting them in my assessment workouts to just do a standard squat. So whether that be a prisoner squat or kind of an arms out squat, if they haven't got the shoulder mobility, let's just see how you move primarily. Let's see where the dysfunction is. And what I'm looking for in any squat pattern or even lunge pattern from a lower body perspective. So let's take all leg extension, leg curl and the fixed machines out. Let's just look at it in regards to lunge and squat. What I'm specifically looking at from a side view is, as somebody lowers, one, when does the ankle stop moving forward and when do we stop moving into dorsiflexion? And two, when does those hips start kicking back? So for me, with a squat or a lunge perspective, the only two joints that I'm looking at is the ankle and the hip, because they're the only two joints that require mobility. So for me, kind of looking at the mobility in those two joints will ascertain from a knee perspective how much knee drive, or whether I go into a quad dominant squat, or I facilitate kind of moving them into something a little bit more stable like a leg press or a leg extension. So what I'm looking at, and I totally agree with you in regards to back position, I'm a big fan of neutral spine. So if your neutral spine is tall, great. If you do have a little bit of hip flexion and have a low bar squat where you've got a hip, as long as you're maintaining neutral spine and we're not getting any pelvic action through the squat. That was the most important thing for me, because as soon as that butt tucks under, we've got pelvic tilt, which again will light up the erectors, the same as if somebody's got a heavy anterior tilt and they're squatting and they're almost kind of ducked back here, where they're trying to pull back but they're getting a lot of extension through the lumbar. Instantly lights up those erectors, and that's going to, so remember what I said, anytime a muscle is either shortened or lengthened, it's in a compromised position. And we know with the squat, the goal is to shorten and lengthen the quads or the hamstrings or the glutes, depending on the type of squat. So what I'm looking at visually with lunges, split squats, Bulgarians, squats of selfies, as you start to ascend, what's happening at the hip, and is there any deviation front and back? And at the ankle, when does dorsiflexion stop? Because a lot of people typically try to keep those knees moving forward and their ankle's not moving. And if their knees are still moving forward, their ankles are not moving, you can be damn sure they're getting a lot of torque through their knee. A great example of this in an exercise is something like an RDL. So apologies, guys, I'm going to stand up and you're going to have to look at my book for a minute. But when I'm talking about the RDL, is what we see a lot of the time is when someone's performing an RDL, we know an RDL should be hip flexion, okay? But what typically happens when we're seeing RDL when somebody goes through their active range is we want an RDL for your hips to shoot back. But what happens a lot of the time is those hips stop, but somebody keeps moving down here. So all that's happening, the minute that these hips stop in an RDL, that's your active range of movement. If we're going any further and you see people on deficit RDLs and those sort of things, the movement for the rest of that torso dropping is going to come from the lumbar. So the RDL is a great one to visually see that logs into everything I was saying about the ankles. So when we're doing an RDL, the minute that those hips stop moving, that's your range of movement for the hamstrings and glutes, because any extra range of movement is going to have to be facilitated by the lumbar spine and other areas of your body, which again builds up torque and essentially starts to kind of throw off a balance and potentially increases injury a little bit. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Thank you.
So, and again, going back to my premise, it's the joints that we need to be really aware of is kind of the joints that require mobility. So typically hips, ankles and thoracic spine. And if we can focus on getting them moving in multiple planes of movement effectively, so rotation, flexion, extension, and getting an optimum moving scapula with the spine from a thoracic standpoint, internal, external rotation, flexion, extension through the hips, and then dorsiplantar flexion, eversion and inversion through the ankle. If we can focus on those movements from a mobility perspective, genuinely, I believe, as well as exercise execution being well, you'll start to rid yourself of any sort of joint pain. Like you, again, train muscles, not movements, and it should start to rid yourself of anything kind of joint-based. Any other questions, guys? Cool. Right, just to finish off, I'd just like to bring Matt on. So what I'd like you to do, Matt, if you're still there, buddy, I know you've clicked off your camera. Just so we can tie in everything that I've spoken about tonight. So just give us a little overview of kind of, obviously you're still early in the process, right? But you've seen some great developments in how you feel, because obviously coming into this process, a lot of joint aches, knees, shoulders, kind of elbows, you had a lot of pain. Just give the guys an update in regards to kind of how you're finding things now and kind of what's been happening with you.
Yeah, it's been surprisingly good so far. Just a brief history, between age 54 and 60, I just became a serious CrossFitter, and I liked the competitiveness of it, the community, and it was a big ego boost for me, and so it ended up with a lot of, not any terrible injuries, but lots of aches and pains. I just realized I had to do something different. So in the last, say, 3 years, I've been just lost. I mean, really didn't have any direction on what to do. And so just briefly, when I think I came in with Coach Dan, I just, again, didn't really know what to do, but I was mistakenly thinking I really couldn't do anything. I thought the answer to
to a lot of things you're talking about, but you know, you begin to believe that the answer to that is just not do anything. And so even though I was working out without any sort of goal in mind, you know, was not making any progress. And even when I did the onboard video, I'm like, those were all movements I've been doing for such a long time. And they were not, even the evaluation, it wasn't really causing any damage or pain. But I told Dan at some point, I said, you know, I've just lost a lot of strength. Like, these are things I can do, and I can make the movements mechanically, but man, my strength was just gone. Especially like just a Bulgarian split squat with no weights. I was just so weak. So that as an introduction, I came into the program, you know, obviously like anybody, I just want to get stronger and bigger and have the cosmetic result. But I was being honest with him. I just really wanted to find some answers and stop hurting as much. So I took off that goal of like what I look like in the mirror and my weight and all those kind of things and just begin to trust the process. So I guess I'm, what am I, 6 weeks, Stan? 6 or 7?
Yeah.
So 7. And I don't know, what I've learned is, you know, consistency is a big thing. Commitment's a big thing. Not getting sidetracked just because something's sort of not feeling good doesn't mean you can't do something. So I've been sort of surprised by that. I don't really feel any worse after I leave the gym. So it's been a kind of a pleasant surprise. But I guess what you wanted me to say too is, you know, I definitely biomechanically, I feel stronger. I pay attention to the feedback. Also, you know, revisit Ben's, you know, excellent videos. You just need a reminder to go back and go, you know, even on that seated pull, you know, he says, you know, pull down towards your pockets. And that's a great movement. It doesn't hurt anything. I don't see how I could hurt anything. The back feels good. I even threw on some extra weight the other day because I'm like, dang, I just feel stronger.
With a seated row, can you see now why you don't get any shoulder pain? Because of what I've just spoken about in regards to resistance profiles, pulling down into your pocket obviously makes the moment arm significantly again, biases the lats, as opposed to what you were doing when we first started was elbows a little bit higher and getting a lot of torque and going through the available active range, right?
For sure. That was one of my problem points was front delt on the left side. So I've done so much work just to go in this direction. I've been trusting, you know, that it's working. You know, I was at a point where I'm actually working as an eye doctor, so I have to just lift my arms in the air all day. And I got where I had to really think about if I could make that movement with no weight. And it's not 100%, but good grief, it's 100% better for sure. So, you know, I can only think that, you know, just a few weeks made a difference. So what would a few months do for me? And the side effect is I think I look a little bit bigger and stronger. I know I'm stronger. My weights are going up again. Mm-hmm. And I even for my cardio days, I can't stay on a machine that long. So I had to sneak in these old CrossFit movements just to keep my heart rate up with just no problems whatsoever so far. So I have a ways to go, but I do see the, you know, a lot of these things are sort of subtle and sort of small, but I think they have a big payoff for me.
Yeah, 100%. And I'd agree. And like I've been saying throughout the talk tonight, it's sometimes we all want to get stronger and we all should be getting stronger. But sometimes it's that old adage of kind of going one step back to go two steps forward. And I'm a big believer. Yeah. The phrase I talk about with clients is oil in the groove. We go to a particular point in the program and then we have a week where we drop weights 10 to 20% and we just have a look at the movement and make sure it's because, again, muscles have got ranges and staying within that active range. And I know for you, Matt, that kind of we joked around doing a Murph and those sort of kind of getting you
Not.
back and proving that you can do CrossFit but pain-free. But when I talk to clients so much about kind of awareness of the body, and I hope what's come across today to all of you guys is training with weights is so much more thought-provoking than just moving weights from A to B. I always use the analogy with clients is we're training muscles over movements and understanding joint actions a little bit deeper, but most importantly, understanding your blind spots and how to make them your strengths is super important because we all have structural dysfunctions, as high up as Ben down to us guys down here, but understanding them and not letting them curtail or make you have any time out of training is what's super important. Because as we said, from a longevity perspective, which we're all here for, I want you guys training until you're in your 70s, 80s, 90s, but training efficiently. And if we take care of protecting the joints, it doesn't have to be kind of pink dumbbell stuff. And I talk to people, rehab is strength training. Strength training is rehab. It all comes as the same continuum in regards to just understanding how to manipulate the variables. So if you are suffering from an injury or you are suffering from a little bit of time, just break it down a little bit more with your coach. Say, right, my elbow hurts because potentially something going on with shoulders. If my shoulder hurts, there's potentially something going on with my spine or something from a positioning standpoint from an execution. And the great thing about exercise, which I'm a bit of an exercise geek, is kind of this. There is an answer to everything. So the context behind everything can be tied to something that's happening potentially either environmentally on a day-to-day basis, how you're sitting, the time you spend sitting, if you've got long trips driving, but it can always be answered. So that exploration around understanding your own biomechanics and then coupling that with kind of going over the execution. And as we talk a bit deeper about it, kind of the strength and resistance profiles of muscles and machines together, and the right exercises for you are going to be super important and what are specific to your setup. But understanding that that could change if you have a busy week of work or 2 weeks at work, something may need to be tweaked. Like if you're doing a heavy pull and you've spent 2 weeks where you've done 20,000 steps and you're lifting and carrying, moving house, for instance, doing a really heavy pull, there's going to be probably something within your joints and fatigue accrued, which makes it a little bit more risky. So can we kind of manipulate the variables to make sure it gives you the greatest opportunity to progress at that time? So you will have a plan for and your program at a 6 week, 8 week phase, but just understanding that all the variables are play, all the variables at play as well, guys. Right, before I shoot off, because you guys that know I always run over time, I never get everything in before 12 o'clock. Is there any questions or anything that I can help you guys with? And has anything popped up over the last kind of hour that you want answering before I jump off, or anything to go a little bit more depth into what I've spoke about this evening? No. Perfect. Well, if there is, I always say, guys, those of you guys that listen to this on repeat, and those of you guys, thank you for turning up this evening. If you do ever have any questions, obviously, I'm always available, coach down at muscleintelligence.com. Kind of if you need anything whatsoever when it comes to biomechanics or understanding your assessments and those sort of things, your coach will be able to do it. But I'm always free to answer questions. But thank you for taking the time to listen tonight. I'm 100% going to bed now because it's too late here and the time's up. But I appreciate every single one of you spending time out your busy days to come on. And I'm sure I'll see you all again soon. But anything I can help with, let me know. But it's been a pleasure as always. Take care and I'll speak to you guys later. Bye bye.
Thanks, Danny. Good job.
Take care. Bye bye.